whatever else it is, the Holy Land is a land of rock. I think one of the reasons it is such a contentious land is because there's so much ammunition lying right by, easily thrown. And it is very appropriate that rock and stone are powerful and recurring metaphors in Jesus' last week. It's very difficult for me to try to convey to you the perspective that Luke is trying to explain to his readers. Perhaps the best way I can do it is by challenging you to envision New York City on September 10th, 2001. September 10th, 2001. Or maybe for those of you a little older, December 5th, 1941. And the placid place of Pearl Harbor. You ever see a movie made in New York, say the year 2000? And your eye is drawn to those twin towers that are no longer there. And there's a part of you that wants to be able to go back in time and to yell like a street corner preacher, "Go away! Get away from this place! The end is near! What seems to be so solid and so real is about all to be blown away." But you know, however much you're right, nobody's going to listen to you. Nobody's going to believe you. What you say sounds too fantastic, too strange, too audacious to be real. That's exactly the scene that Jesus is addressing. You've heard His words, as related by our youth, talking in the shadow of the temple, a temple that is an architectural marvel, Herod's temple, 30 years in the making, a remodeling of a temple that has been in existence for roughly 500 years. Herod has made this his great project. And this temple is the symbol of stability and solidity. It's the site of economic hustle and bustle. It is the center of Israel. And here is this coarse, uneducated, unlettered rabbi speaking a gospel of good news that suggests all that seems so real and permanent is in fact a fleeting thing. But he speaks of a kingdom that is eternal, that has no end. And yet, what he says sounds so audacious. Speaking in the shadow of the temple, he says, the stone that has been rejected, that stone will be the cornerstone of the kingdom of God. They understand he's referring to himself, but what he says sounds so strange. It can't be true. You've heard the words that Jesus said as he speaks in the shadow of the temple. Ah, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, stoning the prophets. I would wish even now that you knew what made for peace, but you don't. And one of his disciples, as they're walking away, talks about the noble stones that are placed in the temple. And Jesus says to him, "The day is coming and coming soon when not one of these stones will be standing atop another." And his words sound too audacious to be real. Luke is writing from a post-9/11 perspective. By the time he is writing, this magnificent temple, 30 years in the remodeling, is now in complete ruin, reduced to rubble in the Jewish-Roman War. One stone is no longer among another. But the movement of this coarse, crude, unlettered prophet, by the time Luke is writing, is now an unquenchable movement. And the Spirit of God has empowered people to share the good news. And the kingdom of God of which this prophet spoke is now a reality, even as the temple is in ruin. Jesus rides into Jerusalem in that ironic moment of triumph, and disciples are appearing and praising, "Praise be unto the King of heaven. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." And the Pharisees cry out, "Tell your disciples to shut up. Shh." And what does Jesus say? If they were silent, even the stones would cry out. Two processes are taking place simultaneously. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, the educated members of the Sanhedrin, all of the refined religious experts who should recognize Jesus for what he is, they turn their hearts to stone. Like Pharaoh before Moses, they harden their hearts. Their hearts become stone in saying to Jesus, "Shh, your disciples." Their hearts harden and become like rock, infertile soil for the seed of the gospel. But meanwhile, the reason we are gathered here today is the gospel of Jesus also had the alternative power upon others. Fishermen, tax collectors, prostitutes, hemorrhaging women, slaves, Samaritans, Jews, Gentiles. Stones learn to sing out, "Blessed is he who comes in the house in the name of the Lord." One group's hearts hardened into rock, but suddenly stones became souls and sang hosannas. That's the story of Holy Week. The Gospel of Luke is one amazing story of conversion after another. Fishermen, tax collectors, prostitutes, hemorrhaging women, lunatics and lepers, Samaritans and slaves, Jews and Gentiles, all find unity in the good news of Christ. And these stones, these hard-hearted souls, become souls receptive, soils receptive to the seed of the gospel. And so Jesus says to the Pharisees, even if you try to shh them, even if you yelled, "Shut up," these stones are going to cry out. Some years ago, a wealthy patron of the arts commissioned a wonderful artist to depict the holy man in town, the person everyone regarded as a saint. The artist did his creation, and as soon as the patron saw it, he was incensed because the artist had depicted the man as cold and brutish and savage. And the patron said, I won't pay for it. But the town saint looked at it and said, it's perfect. Perfect? What do you mean? He's depicted you as ugly, cold, brutish, savage. And the saint said, yes, he has depicted the person I would have become without Christ. He's depicted the person I would have developed into had not the influence of Christ transformed me in a different direction. It's perfect. Holy Week is the chronicle of two different movements. On the one hand, we see chronicled people of religious instruction and wisdom and refinement turning their hearts into stone. On the other hand, we see people who were powerless and outcast and unclean finding their stone souls turned into soils of the gospel. The thing is, we are not merely witnesses of the story. We are participants. Which way will we move as we participate in the story? Will we say, oh, I've heard that story over and over again? Will we harden our hearts against it? Or will the energy and the joy, the wonder of its grace penetrate us and create more fertile soil within us? We know what Jesus' enemies did. They would nail him to a tree and pry him off of it and put him in a tomb and roll a stone across the entrance. And thereby thought they would bring the story to an end. But the stones that had been awakened continued to cry out, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. There are still people to this day trying to roll the stone across the empty tomb and silence the gospel. But those of us whose stones have been awakened, whose souls have been turned into fertile soil, we're called on to give testimony. That's the challenge. That's the challenge we face as we enter into this Holy Week.